Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt and welcome back to Proof to Product. We are taking a summer break here on the podcast. Over the next 5 weeks, we will be re-airing some of our most popular episodes focused on sales and marketing strategies specifically for wholesale. I'm talking about how to pitch new accounts, how to create your catalog, and the hourly rate of exhibiting at a trade show. With summer trade shows reopening and summer releases hitting the shelves of stores, I handpicked these upcoming episodes to help you get ready and to help you feel more confident as you proceed with wholesale. Before we jump into today's episode, a quick reminder that we are opening our Paper Camp program very soon, and you are going to want to be on the wait list. You can join at prooftoproduct.com/papercamp. Paper Camp is where we teach you how to start or scale your wholesale program. It's the most comprehensive program out on the market, and we've been teaching it for over 10 years. Our alumni sell to Target, Anthropology, Container Store, Barnes & Noble, as well as independent boutiques all around the world. We have helped thousands of brands build profitable wholesale programs, and I really want to help you do the same. So join that waitlist by going to prooftoproduct.com/papercamp. Also, the episodes you'll hear this month feature our Paper Camp students and speakers. They are generously sharing their knowledge and experience. And when you come to Paper Camp, you join a community of brands that are working together to build sustainable, profitable, and impactful businesses. It's a really special community, and we look forward to having you join us. All right, let's dive into today's episode.
We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There is so much information out there tailored toward service providers, so we have carved out a space just for you. The creative entrepreneur making and selling physical goods. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business.
Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. On today's episode, I'm interviewing Kimberly Yerkowitz, the New York sales rep for Crow & Canary. She's also one of our Paper Camp speakers. On today's episode, we're talking about the roles of sales reps in your business, and we also weigh in with why catalogs are important if you're selling wholesale. Hey Kimberly, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast today. Thanks so much for joining me.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
So you have an incredible background. It's such a rich background in our stationery world. You have worked like every side.
By accident.
Well, it now sounds like you've done it all
yes,
intentionally.
Strategic the whole time.
Exactly. So can you start at the beginning and tell people, I mean, you've owned a retail shop, you've worked for other retailers, you're now a sales rep, you've had a line of your own. Like, tell us how you got to where you are today, please, and your
sure.
experience in the industry.
Yes, I will. In the 90s, the late 90s, I worked at a letterpress studio called Lunalux, which is not around anymore. You know what? That studio was sort of, everyone did everything there. It was packing and collections and printing and the wholesale catalog, and everybody worked on everything. So I got a lot of experience, and I think I was there for 4 years, and it sort of changed the whole trajectory of, like, it started my career. And so, like, after that, I moved to New York, and I worked at this really beautiful French paper store called Papivore, which is also not around anymore. And then that got me into sort of New York retail and branding and, like, really great high-end products and international buying and all kinds of cool stuff. And then after that, I opened my own store my first time, my first one with my husband. And that was more of like a custom invitation place with a little bit of retail. It was sort of a combo in the West Village. And that was great. That was sort of getting my toe, dipping my toe the first time into, oh my God, what if I owned my own store? And that was right around 9/11. And so that wasn't like perfect timing for the New York economy, as you know. And then I went and worked at Craning Company, which is sort of the first corporate, bigger sort of machine place. And that was a lot of experience in sort of managerial stuff and staffing, product development, and they did a really good job of like teaching you about like the history of the company and why 100% cotton paper is so beautiful. Just like really like fine details about stuff. And it was great to know all that stuff and sort of see the history of paper, which is what, you know, we were in anyway. So I did that for a while. And then I went to Kate's Papery, mm-hmm. which is no longer around. I feel like I keep saying it's no longer around. But the evolution of the industry is sort of, it's fun to watch, like, things come and go, like why we all have different jobs, like where we can go, where opportunities are, stuff like that.
And leveraging the experiences and the knowledge and the, you know, the contacts too. You've met a lot of really great people through these
positions. You're absolutely right. And it taught me sort of the size and scale I wanted to be working at and whether or not I wanted to be in New York. That answer is yes, because we also lived back in Minneapolis for a while, and I had my second store for a while. That was about 3 years. And that was a good combo of all the stuff I'd learned before that.
Yeah.
But it didn't have New York. So back we went to Brooklyn. And so now I've been here, back here for 8 years. And I worked at, like I said, I worked at Kate's for a while. And then Kate's closed partially because of the recession. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of factors. People ask me all the time why it's gone. It was a beautiful store.
It was.
And then I teamed up with Karina Murray from Crow and Canary. And she gave me a job as a rep. And it's
how did that come to be? Do you want to share that story? Or if not, it's okay too.
But you know what? It's such a good, I feel like we were supposed to meet. Like I think it happened. Certainly there was like a universe thing behind it. But it was, we were chatting on Twitter. It was like a tweet.
Yep.
Like, hey, I need reps. Hey, well, I need a job. it was that simple. And we hit it off. I think it worked well because she and I are very similar.
Yeah. Well, you know, she and I met through Twitter too, right?
I love that so much.
And like all the initial boot camp speakers at the beginning were all people that I had met through Twitter when I was navigating my first shows for Kelp Design. So
that's so crazy.
I know.
So simple. Does that make us old? Weird. Does it make us old? Well, I'm older than you. It makes us a little older than some people. But it, you know, it wasn't through email. It wasn't a phone call and a resume.
But I think it was like, that was where I really saw the power of social media though, and the relationships that could connect people and really create friendships and business contacts and business relationships from afar.
I totally agree. And I think, I don't know if Karina remembers this or not, but I remember thinking before I had spoken to her that I knew that I would like her because I think I had read something on her blog or I knew the lines she was already repping, but there was like a commonality already in place there.
Yeah.
And that was really helpful. Well,
it's true. Like you can gather so much about a person or a brand or a business through their website, through their social media following. Now, you know, it's so much easier to kind of get a sense of who people are.
Well, I don't want to weed out, sounds a little bit weird, but you can sort of separate like those are my people and perhaps those are not my people.
Right. Totally.
Yeah. So.
So you tweeted Karina and said, hey, I need a job. And she said, hey, I'm looking for reps. And here you are now today.
She was like, would you be interested in New York? And I was like, oh my gosh. And so then, you know, we probably had two or three conversations about it. And then that was 7 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a windy path, but in retrospect, it sort of looks like it makes sense and maybe it was deliberate. However,
well,
it was not.
I think it goes to show that maybe like you were kind of always meant to be in this industry and because you were drawn to positions and jobs and companies that were in the same, like there's common ties between all these different things you've done. So,
Well, and after Kate's, I really did take time to say, okay, what do I want to be doing? Like what elements of this am I good at? What are my strengths?
Yeah.
What am I not interested in pursuing anymore? Or, you know, what am I too junior for? What am I too senior for? Mm-hmm. All of those things.
That is such an important assessment though, even for people that are running their own businesses. I think it's important to look at our own leadership styles, our strengths, our weaknesses to decide what we're doing next.
Well, and that helps with delegating too. Like then once you have people to delegate to, you can be like, what do I want to keep? What should be on my plate?
100%.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So since then it's grown and been great and I'm still in the paper industry and that makes me very happy. I work with some really great retailers and we get to see fine folks at every trade show and it's great. Yeah.
So for people that aren't familiar with sales reps do, can you just give a quick and dirty overview of like what your role is and, you know, the partnership you play with the different brands you work with?
Yes. So we look at ourselves as sort of a seamless like internal sales mechanism for the lines. We're road reps. We are not showroom reps. I don't know if a podcast before this has touched on that, but
no, we haven't yet. We talk about it at Paper Camp quite a bit, but
we do.
You break it down a little bit.
Yeah. So we go to the stores. We bring all of the samples to the stores mm-hmm. instead of somebody coming to a showroom that we have like one sort of big office that people would come visit. We go, and I prefer the road rep situation for my style, because I like to tailor things to all of my stores. All the stores are different. They need to see different things. It's easier for them on their schedule, on their time, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And then, you know, we're the sales arm of all of those other businesses. We rep about 20, I think it's 23 lines right now. Mm-hmm. And
so you take all their products and you go meet with your contacts, the retail shop owners and buyers.
We do.
And you show them all their goods, and then you'll write orders.
And yeah. And then we do both of the New York Now trade shows, the February show and the August show. We will not be at the stationery show this May because a lot of our lines do their own booths there. Mm-hmm. Like that's their time to shine. And we just keep, you know, like some stores I'll meet with twice a year. Some stores I meet with 10 times a year. It just depends on what each individual retailer needs.
I mean, the fact, okay, I look at you and Karina and other sales reps, and I always think you guys must have just a wealth of information and feedback, because you're meeting with these stores on a regular basis and you're hearing things from the buyers. And now every store is different, right? So what they need or what their feedback is going to be is, you know, it's kind of a one-off opinion. But over time, I would assume that you start to hear similar things as you meet with more and more people. So like, I guess, what are you hearing from buyers? What are they wanting? Or how could a product-based business, because that's really who's listening to this podcast, how could they put themselves in the best position when they're reaching out to these stores? Like, are there things that you're hearing with regards to pitching the buyers that they like or don't like?
You know, I think a lot of stores are different, and I can only speak to New York City buyers.
That's a great point to mention. Every region is very different too.
Yes. I think there are some truths that are sort of, you know, blanket nationwide mm-hmm. things. Number one, like, don't call a busy store. Don't bug a retailer more than, you know, five times. My buyers love to get things in the mail. They love to be able to see things and touch things as if they're having an appointment with you.
Right.
And they want to see things that are like not the same as every other thing on maybe Etsy or that they might see on Instagram.
Yeah.
Something that's fresh, something that speaks to their specific customer. Like maybe your line is better for 10 really unique stores than 20 sort of general stores. You know, mm-hmm. it just depends on what you're making and what your sort of voice is and what your design.
Yeah, definitely having a unique aesthetic and unique point of view of what you're bringing to the market is important. I know that Karina's talked a lot about that at Paper Camp in the past, and we all really agree with that same mentality. You know, do you think people need to be tailoring their messages differently to each store? You know, how can they customize that as best they can?
You know, I think in the beginning, no. That's unless you have all the time in the world, certainly you can.
I need more time. Can I have some of that time in the world?
Where's that magic time? I think the very first outreach, you can just say, look, I'm, you know, so-and-so, and this is what I make, and maybe you'd like it at your store, and here's a catalog, mm-hmm. and here's a sample of one of my products, unless you're making like jewelry or expensive candles or something, and you can't really send mm-hmm. them a whole thing. And then if you get feedback, and if they're like, yeah, tell me more about it, or I am interested, or you do get one order, and then when you're waiting for like the next order, then you can try and tailor it, like as you know more about your buyers.
Yeah.
But I don't think you need to do it like the first time out.
That's a really good point. I would encourage people to keep track of notes as they're reaching out to people.
Absolutely.
So if they're meeting people at a show, or if they're just reaching out on their own outside of show time, you know, if they do get a response via email and the person says, you know, they like this but didn't like this, or they're not buying for that right now, like I think it's really important to track those notes.
Absolutely. Well, and you'll notice too, like, so say if you have like four different orders from a store, you'll know from what they're ordering, what they're reordering mm-hmm. and what didn't. Sell totally. For them, or perhaps it's the time of year, or maybe they forgot. Maybe that means you need some reps that can remind them. But yeah, like I can, now that I've worked with my retailers long enough, I can say, oh, so and so will love this, or oh, that's so good for that store. And that's just a byproduct of doing it for a long time. Mm-hmm. But the first time around, you just want to let people know who you are. And that you're interested in working with them.
And I think what you mentioned earlier of including the catalog link or a PDF or something
And if you're sending it by email, and some images of your work is really what's going to catch their eye. If you are sending a snail mail package, which again, like you mentioned, if you have lower priced items and you can send samples or it's not super clunky or whatever, you know, sending a package is a really great way to capture their attention too.
It is. I think too, if you have a lot of, if your line is still sort of, I want to say all over the place, but that's not a bad thing. It's not as cohesive.
If you're still refining your line and making it more cohesive, yes.
Your stuff's all over the place. The aim is to so that the buyer knows what your stuff looks like. Right. So if you have some texty cards and then some watercolor cards and then some other typography and designy sort of looking things, you want to make sure they know what they're getting into. Because if they love one of your cards, but the rest of your line look is all florals and they didn't realize it because they only looked at the one card, that's, I think that's a big deal. Because I know buyers have said like, I thought this was this.
So that's a good point.
It's a little tricky.
No, that's a good point. Because then you either need to just articulate that you've got these different things or send different samples so they can actually see it.
Yeah. There's plenty of lines that design by collection and that can be, that can be done very well.
Yeah.
But buyers don't want to be like, like confused by it. Like I thought this was this. I mean, they, if buyers are looking at 100 different lines, like it's hard to remember what each one is about.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You mentioned catalogs and I know this is something that we talk about quite a bit, especially you and I at camp. Can you kind of for the audience just share why catalogs are important and how you as a rep use them in your job?
Catalogs are your best friend because they take the place of you. When you're when you send something to a buyer, it's like you're sitting there with them. It's like a rep appointment or an interaction at a trade show. They're looking at you. They're hearing your voice. They're seeing all your contact information. They know where you're coming from. And then they get to see all of your product at once.
Yeah.
It's a huge, huge thing. And it's a reminder, like a catalog can sit on someone's desk. So just if they don't remember to order that day or that week, it's then it, you're part of their store. You're part of their office and they'll remember to look back through it and say, oh, I loved this. So it's like a reminder. It's like you being in the office for, you know, just a small part of you, which is
absolutely
nice. We use them like every day, like even though it's a nice placeholder for a rep, like you can sort of send a catalog and be like, oh, I'll follow up and take a look at this in the meantime. I use them in appointments all the time. Like in just in case I don't have the whole deck with me or if we're looking at Christmas and holiday stuff, but then they want to refer back to the wedding cards or, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
It's always helpful. Pricing. I don't have all of my prices memorized. I have most of them memorized in case my boss is listening. But yeah, it's a great reference tool. I use them all the time.
Yeah. I think too, you know, from the manufacturer standpoint, like I remember when I was doing my first catalog and it just felt like such a big project.
It is. They're hard to do.
They are. And you want to do it well. It's time intensive and it's costly. And there's so many details that I, one, would encourage everyone to make sure that if you're doing your catalogs, even if you've done catalogs before, make sure you've got some fresh eyes that are looking at that and reviewing it because, I don't know, the SKU number, there's so many details, right?
Oh, the pricing and the SKUs.
I know.
Established lines that have been doing this for 10 years that are like our top sellers still make typos in their catalogs.
Oh, yeah. It happened. I mean, I don't know that I ever produced a single catalog that I didn't find a typo in later. And I was like, gosh, I thought this was going to be the one time. But anyhow. But what I wanted to kind of articulate or talk about now further is like, it's a big project, it's intimidating, but it is something that is a valuable sales tool, particularly for, specifically for anyone that's trying to sell wholesale. But there are some things that people could do to kind of extend the life of it. So what have we, what do you recommend to help people kind of maintain maybe over, maybe keep the same catalog for 18 months or even 2 years if they can stretch it that long?
Oh yeah, that's totally okay. I think every time we talk about it, people sort of get the panic look in their eyes like a hurricane is coming.
Yeah.
While it is very hard, it's a lot of work, and but it's very important and it's time consuming and expensive, as you mentioned. However, if you make one every 2 years, then you can spread that, you know, those costs over a lot longer than, and even if you add new product and you're like, but I don't want to make a new catalog, you can do a slip sheet, sort of, this is my new release. This is part of the catalog. As long as you don't date something that says this catalog is only for 2016, like then you're fine.
Which is what I did my first time. I did it was 2009 or something. And, you know, I was so proud of this catalog. And then it came to the end of 2009 and I'm like, oh, I still have a bunch left. And now it's 2010. What do I do? So one of the things I definitely recommend is that people date it over 2 years. So for example, if you're making it now, it would be 2017, 18 kind of deal. And that way it just buys you a little bit more time. But
it sure does.
But as Kimberly mentioned, like adding slip sheets is just like an extra loose leaf sheet of paper that goes into your catalog when you release a new product in between.
And actually, that's a fun way to say, look what's new. Like the loose one is the new stuff. So like, because buyers will always say, what's new? It's the first thing they want to go to once you're, you know, up and running. And that's an easy way to just say, oh, the new stuff is that first page, that first loose page in the catalog. Yeah.
I've seen some online discussions lately about whether or not people need a printed catalog or with whether a digital catalog is sufficient. And I think that digital catalogs are a must if you're selling wholesale.
Oh, absolutely.
And the question really needs to be, am I going to print it or not? And in my opinion, I feel like if this is something you plan to do for the long haul and you want to have a serious wholesale business, you should budget to have a printed catalog. That being said, I realize that not everyone has the time or resources at the beginning to make that happen. So if you, all of you listening, are in a position where a printed catalog might not be available for you or like in your budget, take the time now to build out your templates of what your catalog, what you'd like it to look like and how it's mirroring your brand and how you want your products displayed, and make sure that you have your digital one on your website somewhere, or you could save it on Issue, which is a great resource. Yep. It's issuu.com. And then too, like once that template's in place, when you need to redo your catalog, you can just drop new stuff in and hopefully when you're ready to print, it makes it easier too.
I would like to add too that even if you can't afford to have a perfect bound, you know, J. Crew looking fashion spread catalog, you can certainly print out just print out your digital one like a line sheet kind of thing. Yeah. Like that's absolutely okay. I think you should aim for a proper catalog, but at the very beginning, someone will want to take something for you and you don't want to be left saying, oh, here's my business card.
Totally.
It's a missed opportunity.
I hear a lot of questions all the time about line sheets versus catalogs and what's the difference. Can you kind of break it down for people right now?
Oh, sure. A line sheet is just it's sort of like a review of all your stuff. It's not like beautiful pictures of everything and lifestyle shots. It's just a listing of all the products you have along with your contact information and your pricing. Mm-hmm. It's like just an easy little reference sheet.
It's like a one or two pager usually.
Yep.
Yeah. So we kind of talked a little bit about new releases when we were talking about adding the slip sheets, but can we talk about the importance of new releases and how that can really drive companies to greater success?
Yes. I think the big picture is like watching your yearly calendar, like timing your stuff out. And that goes back to catalogs too. Mm-hmm. Don't work, like if you can, try and avoid working on your catalog like the day before a show or whatever. Like work on it all year long. Mm-hmm. And then it's not so daunting at the end, or like before you're launching or before you're attending a show or whatever. As far as new releases for product go, we tell everybody this and sometimes they listen and sometimes they don't. But buyers really do say, what's new? Very succinctly, very rudely sometimes, very impatiently, like, what's new? Just show me the new. And you will lose a round, like a seasonal round or like your spot in line if you don't have a bunch of new stuff. And that I don't mean like, oh, we have two new cards. Like we did a birthday card and one new thank you. It's a collection. Like it's a release. And a release is at least 6 cards, I would say. And usually it's, you know, between 10 and 15. And some of the bigger companies do, you know, 20 or 30, unless you're like completely changing the look of something and you're like, oh, now we're doing everything that's, you know, gold foil or whatever.
Let's go back to what you were saying about getting to the back of the line. I think it's important for people to understand that really the buyers in the wholesale market are purchasing at very specific times and that reps are going out at certain times. So if, for example, you're going out to show your holiday, you're only going to meet with that store once probably to show them holiday. Right. And so if the manufacturer, me, my line, mm-hmm. doesn't have things ready to you on time before you go out to meet with that store about, let's say, holiday stuff,
yeah.
then that store is not going to see your holiday stuff. Or you may follow up later, I guess, with an email or something like that, but right. they won't see
it. It's not the same thing. Correct.
Right.
Right. We're not sitting there going, oh my, like you want, especially if you work with reps, you want me saying, oh my gosh, look at how gorgeous this is. This is my favorite holiday card this year, or, you know, whatever yeah. the pitch is about something. But you know, buyers have limited time. We have limited time.
Yep.
The lines have limited time. Like you want to coordinate that the best you can and make it easier on everybody to just do yeah. it all at once. Or if you don't have reps, that's certainly not just applicable to reps, but if you know that it's buying season for Valentine's and you know yeah. that the buyers are looking at it, you want to get your stuff in there. And if you're too late, they will say, we used all our money. Like our open to buy budget for Valentine's is done.
Right. Well, I think it's always, I mean, it's easier said than done. Let me put it that way too. I yeah. feel like it took me a long time, and I know it's taken a lot of our alums a long time to kind of get on the regular release schedule of having 3 to 4 releases a year and mm-hmm. making sure they're releasing. It's a lot. It takes a while to get on those schedules.
Right.
And so if you're only releasing once a year, or if you're building up, like build up to it, maybe do one this year and then do 2 next year and then try to get to 3. I guess my point is just do what you can with what you have.
Absolutely.
And what you're able
Absolutely.
To.
I think the pressure of keeping up with like way bigger lines can be, you know, really overwhelming.
For sure. Well, and two, it's not just the designing and sitting down to design, but it's the putting the cash out to produce the product.
Absolutely.
And
you might feel like, wow, this is not the time of year mm-hmm. that I'm super inspired. And like 3 months later, you might think, where were all these ideas 3 months ago when I was trying to come out with some stuff? My advice for situations like that is, I know a lot of people, this has actually come up a lot recently. A lot of people will do the big May release, whether or not they're doing the stationery show or not,
right.
but they know that that's a big release time of year. And they'll do 25 cards or 25 pieces of whatever product they're doing or around whatever big show their industry has, instead of thinking, oh, I could get away with doing 16 of these and save
some for August.
And make it easier yeah. on myself and then have a smaller release at a different time. I encourage that.
No, I agree with you 100%. The other thing I've seen come up with a couple of coaching clients is, you know, they're trying to get to 3 releases a year and they feel like they're constantly behind and they're putting right. a ton of pressure on themselves to do a very large release like you're talking about. And so what I advise them to do is maybe skip the August release or something.
Sure.
And instead then focus on the October, like the stuff that you're going right. to do in the fall. That way it gives you right. a little more time to catch up and kind of get your yep. wheels and your processes in motion. And so I guess I just want to point out that there's no like one perfect solution or one way to
nope.
do this. Like everyone has to do what's best for them and their business and their schedule and their dollars and all that.
Sure. Things. Well, and I think what's really encouraging too, a lot of the lines on the Crow and Canary roster have different strengths. Like some people mm-hmm. have really good Valentine's and not so many Christmas cards, or they have a really good holiday selection and calendars yeah. and they don't focus much on Mother's Day, you know, like mm-hmm. you don't have to be good at everything right away. And if you're better at
Forever.
Holiday and that's your, like, then your year is going to be, you know, heavier on that end than it is on the
yeah.
other.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we can't be all things to all people, right? So focus on our strengths and do
yes.
our best.
Do what you can.
For sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have been coming to Paper Camp for a while now,
mm-hmm.
and you always are such a great mentor and encourager.
Oh, thank
and
you.
I mean,
I love it. I love my campers.
It's fun, right? Why is it important for you to give back to our industry and particularly come speak at Paper Camp?
There are many reasons. First, I want to say that I would do anything that you asked me to participate
oh,
in. I think,
Thank
no,
you.
Listen, I think you are, your listeners need to know this. I think that you are the tippy top of our industry in terms of consulting and collaborating and conference planning. So first, there's that. You stop
Thank
it.
You.
And then in terms of what we do as reps, Paper Camp is also a really good opportunity for Karina Murray and I to talk about her company and what we do. And I think it's puzzling. It's unfortunate that people, like reps, sort of get a bad rap sometimes, I think, out of people not understanding what it is that we really do or the, like,
right.
the value we provide. So it's nice, selfishly, to be able to talk directly to campers about like the support that, like all the behind the scenes hustle and the support that we provide and sort
well,
of.
Well, and it dispels any myths they have
right.
or anything they've heard on the street that may or may not be
right. So to be able to like get them fresh and be like, here's what we do.
Yeah.
And then my favorite part is how PaperCamp feeds into like the overarching work philosophy that I look to as most important. And that's the support for art and commerce, the creative work that we do that builds the framework for women-owned businesses, small business retail, like neighborhoods and communities, and then job creation for even more women, and how that can multiply over and over. So when newcomers see the women who have done that successfully, teach them in the generous platform that you provide us to be able to do that, that helps kick them off into like an even bigger, like expanding that even more.
Isn't it motivating?
It is motivating. Well, and I think it's motivating for us. I'm psyched to see campers all the time. Like, oh my God, you get to start. Like, it's so fresh and exciting and new and, mm-hmm. you know, how good for you. And then it's also reassuring for like the rest of the industry. Like, we're going to stay alive, you know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Sometimes people will say, oh, do people still write letters? And I, you know, mm-hmm. I want to cringe and be like, it's an $8 billion industry. Thank you very much.
Right. I know the defensive side of me gets a little bent out of shape too.
But yeah, so like I want to be positive and make sure that I'm spending as much time sort of being supportive and positive yeah. about it.
No, I think the reciprocal nature is definitely the reason I wanted to start this. I mean, people have heard my story by now that just like I started for selfish reasons that I needed community. I craved community. And I don't know what I know. And I was hungry for colleagues that I could lean on and they could lean on me. But now that, you know, we've worked with hundreds of people and it's been really humbling to see the growth that they've had and to see the reciprocal nature of it. So meaning that like right. people come through camp, maybe they're earlier in their business or maybe they're midway through their business, you know, and like, but then once they're through on the other side, now they're coming back and helping to really mentor the new group that's
it's
coming
amazing.
In. And it's just, I don't know, it's very satisfying. I didn't mean to go off on a tangent of like why PaperCamp is so great, but I think that the mentorship and the, and you find this in other communities too. So I think it's important to talk
Absolutely.
About it from yes. from the standpoint of we all lift each other up. And yep. if we can share what we know and what we've experienced so that it helps others fast forward or avoid mistakes or.
Sure.
That's really important. I'm glad to hear that that's one of your main yes. reasons for wanting to do this.
Yeah.
I know, too, that you are a major champion for your independent retail shops that you work with and women-owned businesses. So. You know, I was pleased to hear that as well. But do you want to talk about that a little bit more?
Sure. I think it surprises a lot of people. Like, I deliberately don't shop at Target. And I don't – I know this people are going to be like, pause for gasp. I don't shop
at Target. It's just the moms that's, like, our safe haven to go get coffee and all the things you need at Target. But go on. Carry on.
I don't shop. And, again, I know that this is easier to do in New York City than it is other places. But I don't shop at Anthropology. I don't shop from Amazon. Mm-hmm. Though, like, I'm just trying really hard to – push forward the work that we're specifically doing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that doesn't match up. I know that a lot of people design for Target, but I don't want to give them my money if they're fighting against neighborhood retail and local brick and mortar and, mm-hmm. you know, the things that we're trying to sustain.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And, yeah. It's a personal decision. And I know that it comes at a cost. Like sometimes, you know, things are either less convenient or more expensive. Mm-hmm. But I decided, I don't know, 8 years ago or something that I was going to make that effort and
yeah.
knock wood. I still can. I'm lucky. I'm fortunate enough to be able to do that.
I love that because it's your personal principles that you're yeah. standing on and you're making a conscious decision to support the people and the brands and the local economy.
Yes. Too. Yeah. It's good for tax money too, you know, for our communities. Like it's,
oh,
it's all, it's a whole big part. It's a whole overarching. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I always appreciate when you come to camp because you're so just honest and you give great feedback, but it's done in a gentle way where it truly comes from a place of, you know, you want people to succeed. And sometimes that means giving them great feedback that, yes, you're on the right path. And sometimes that means giving them a little bit of hard feedback of, I think you should change the direction of this, or I think you should think about these things, or why haven't you done this? And sure. you do ask some difficult questions sometimes.
Well, and I think that goes back to sort of my lengthy career changes and evolution. Mm-hmm. It like doing one thing, you don't have to do one thing for 40 years. Like it might, right. maybe it means like if you're a designer, maybe it means you go into licensing or like all the things we talked to about different revenue streams at camp. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe it turns out if you're in retail, you leave retail, or maybe it turns out you're better at, you know, XYZ. And yeah. that only happens if you're willing to like sort of commit to the industry and find different ways to sort of exist within it. And I'm lucky to have been able to do that.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I was actually being interviewed for another podcast this morning, and somebody else's podcast, and they were asking about, you know, how do people manage, you know, custom and retail and wholesale and all mm-hmm. those different things? Because mm-hmm. it's essentially like running three separate businesses.
Absolutely.
And I said, yes, yes, it is. And when I started, just like a lot of people, when they start, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And I was doing custom work. I was doing retail work. I was doing wholesale work because I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And sometimes it does take that experimental time to see what you enjoy and to work out the bugs. And then it's okay, as you mentioned, to pivot and to start peeling off pieces. The first thing I took off was my custom side. And then I stopped really nurturing my retail side and just mm-hmm. focused on wholesale. And then in 2016 is when I decided to close the wholesale side. And I still do my licensing work for mm-hmm. Kelp, but you know, my time and effort is focused on bootcamp now, and I'm happy doing that. And I feel like I'm making a bigger impact in the industry that way.
Well, and all of those things that you did in the past make you better at what you're doing now. Like all of those things sort of add up to the whole package and the whole experience. I think Absolutely. It's hard. One thing that I think your listeners should keep in mind, I think it's beneficial to understand that sometimes what your favorite thing to do is not necessarily the thing that you are best at.
Yeah.
And I don't think I learned that until I kept being like, I only want to do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I learned that some of the things that I'm good at, I'm like, oh, really? Those, like, I don't want to be good at that. that's the boring part, or, you know, whatever.
But I'm really good at the bookkeeping. Just kidding.
I really love sales reports.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's important, like, as you grow and the longer you do stuff that balances out.
Yeah. And I do think that some of that comes with time. I think some of that comes with just introspective time to think about what you're doing and to be intentional with the decisions you make in your business. Absolutely. And the other thing, like, stuff doesn't always go as planned, or, you know, it doesn't always go as expected. So it's totally fine. If something doesn't go as planned, it is not a failure. It is just another opportunity to, like, think on it and switch gears or change or I don't know.
It also makes you a really good problem solver. Like, I was listing all the stuff that I've done. I'm like, oh, wait, that store closed. Oh, wait, that's not there anymore. Like, sometimes, like, things don't have, like, their shelf life is only 5 years. Yeah. So you treat it like a project instead of like, oh, what will I do now? Like, you pivot and you learn a new thing or a new piece and you add a new layer.
Totally. But it keeps us fresh too.
I think so too. And I know that people used to have jobs, like the same job or the same company for 40 years. I can't imagine that being the case. That seems foreign to me now.
I think you can still have, like, I think you can still do the same thing for a long time. And I think you can have loyal employees that stick with you for a long time. But I think the way small businesses are running is changing. You know,
I think they have to evolve too quickly. Not mm-hmm. too quickly. They have to evolve more quickly than just being like, oh, we'll do this for 20 years.
Well, and I think the workforce is demanding more from employers too. I mean, I worked in the corporate world for, I don't know, 13, 14 years, I think it was. And in a very corporate setting, I was in international law firms doing business development and marketing. Like, can't get any more suit and tie than that. But
that's awesome.
Yeah. And it was great. I mean, I've obviously, like, I did it for a really long time and I liked what I was doing. I felt really rewarding, and I was doing actually a lot of what I do for boot campers, but I was doing it for attorneys, like helping them build their personal brands and everything and be strategic in their business development. But my point is that time was not lost time. That was time and information and experience that has really helped me develop what I'm doing now. So, like you were saying, just to kind of bring this full circle, is there's always things to take from our different experiences and leverage to what we're doing now or to the changes that we're making.
Exactly. Important to pay attention to those. Like, that's another point on the side of, like, trying to be present. Like, mm-hmm. oh, maybe I'll need this later. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe this will be useful.
Yeah. One of my friends, Carol Lyons from Roar Events, she's doing some pretty crazy, amazing things, but she messaged me yesterday and she was saying, why are we always so busy? Like, as entrepreneurs, we put so much pressure on ourselves for this busy, for this hustle. Like, why can't we just be happy checking three things off our to-do list today and going out for a walk and enjoying life? Right. And, you know, like, why do we not feel productive unless we have just a grand slam, you know, like, packed day that's because the jam-packed day causes so much stress and everything. So I don't know. It's just interesting. I feel like this is coming up a lot for people in my circles, at least, of like, we got to dispel this whole like busy.
Well, yeah, I think everyone would have to agree at the same time and then say, okay, none of us do this. Otherwise, right. it is competitive. I think people wear exhaustion as like a badge of honor. Like, oh, mm-hmm. I'm so busy and hardworking that I have run myself into the ground.
Yeah.
And that's like good for you, but that's not that can't last. And
it's not healthy. It's not sustainable.
Right. And it sets a bad example. Like I wouldn't want someone that I was mentoring or supporting or teaching or raising to follow that, you know. It's hard.
Yeah, for sure. No, balance is hard. Balance is for sure hard. And I think too, like as your business scales, you start to have more people or more things pulling on you. You know, if you hire staff, then they need stuff from you. And not in a bad way. Not in a like,
yes,
everybody needs something or I'm right. Oh, so busy. But I do think there is, you know, people need stuff to keep doing their job too. Yeah. And so you just, I think it's up to ourselves, our own individual beings, to set better boundaries and to recognize that it's okay to be present. It's okay to push pause on everything. And
sure.
I don't know. Yeah. This is taking a little bit of a turn from our conversation, but I thought it was an important one. And when some of the things you said really sparked these thoughts. So thank you.
Great.
Well, Kimberly, where can people follow you online if they'd like to check you out?
They can follow me on Instagram at Kimberly Canary.
Kimberly
Canary. All of the canaries that work for Crow and Canary have Christine Canary and David Canary and Alex Canary. So we're the canaries. So I'm Kimberly Canary. And on Twitter, I think I have a Kimberly Canary feed, but I never go there. I accidentally only tweet terrible Trump things on my Brooklyn Stationer Twitter feed. So it's BKLYN_Stationer if you care to find that.
We'll include that in the show notes too. Yeah, well, thanks so much for joining me today. It was a pleasure.
Oh, my pleasure.
Before I go, I need you to do two things for me. The first is, if you found this podcast episode helpful, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating and write a review. I read each and every one, and it helps our show out tremendously. And secondly, if you want to see your products lining the shelves of your favorite stores, I want you to go join the waitlist for Paper Cam. I only offer this program twice a year, and we sell out every single time. Everyone on the waitlist gets first dibs on tickets, so head to prooftoproduct.com/papercamp to save your seat. That is all I have for you today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing with your friends. I will be back next week with a new episode.